Hello there. Today is Thursday, June 16th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, President Obama held and hugged grieving family members in Orlando, Florida today.
Today, the Vice President and I told them on behalf of the American people that our hearts are broken too.
U.S. efforts are doing little to dent the Islamic State's global reach. More Republicans are showing concern about presumptive presidential nominee Donald Trump. Legal marijuana, is it having any impact on crime in the U.S.? Also ahead, the trailer released for a popular docudrama on a slain rapper. It's all on today's International Edition. President Barack Obama did hold and hug grieving family members today. He and the vice president met privately with relatives of the 49 people killed and the 53 wounded at Pulse, the gay nightclub last Sunday, which had the largest mass shooting in U.S. history.
These families could be our families. In fact, they are our family. They're part of the American family. And today, the Vice President and I told them, on behalf of the American people, that our hearts are broken too, and that we stand with you, and that we are here for you, and that we are remembering those who you loved so deeply.
And he said the family's grief is truly beyond description.
As a nation, we've also been inspired by the courage of those who risked their lives and cared for others. Partners whose last moments were spent shielding each other. The mother who gave her life to save her son. The former Marine whose quick thinking saved dozens of lives.
And he said he had no easy answers to their questions about why mass shootings continue to happen, but he did praise the Senate for scheduling votes next Monday on gun control measures, although the legislation is likely to fail. Let's take a look at what is trending online with our social media guru, G. Abby Lee. G., I imagine that Orlando is still heavy on people's minds.
It's very much so. And like we just heard, President Obama is in Orlando to meet with gay and lesbian survivors of the nightclub shooting last weekend. Vice President Joe Biden is also on that trip. ABC News was one of the first media outlets to report on the trip. And although it is, without a doubt, a comforting gesture for the victims' families, many left negative comments on that news Facebook post. One of the most liked replies is asking, why is this big news? It should be the norm. Also wondering, did he, referring to President Obama, visit the families of the Navy SEALs who lost their lives? More than 300 people liked that comment. Another person argued the trip is to push a political agenda and not about uniting the nation.
So did the president tweet about his visit at all?
He didn't, not from his account at POTUS, but the White House did. It is on Twitter at White House, and it's not specifically about Thursday's trip, but a video clip of the president's speech after the attack. It also included a quote from the speech. It says, "We have to make it harder for people who want to kill Americans to get their hands on weapons of war," at POTUS. In the last 24 hours, more than 1,400 people liked it. But guess which tweet got more likes than a president's speech shared by the White House account? A tweet by Donald Trump. Are you surprised?
Not at all. What did he say?
One of his most liked comments is about his meeting with the National Rifle Association. He tweeted Wednesday, "I'll be meeting with the NRA, who has endorsed me about not allowing people on the terrorist watch list or the no-fly list to buy guns." Almost 42,000 people liked that tweet, and that's over 40,000 more likes than the White House video. Lori, back to you.
All right. Thank you so much for that, G. You can tweet her your questions and comments to at VOA underscore IE. Tag G and I on those tweets, and also you can reach G at G Abby Lee. Thanks, G. Here are some of the top stories we're following at voanews.com. The killing of a British member of parliament has stunned a country where gun attacks are rare. The U.S. launches twin strikes against IS from Mediterranean Gulf. Russia football violence stokes fears before the World Cup 2018. Croatia's parliament has ousted its government. and Donald Trump's Orlando comments deepen the Republican split. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Well, the director of the CIA has given a grave warning about the threat of the Islamic State. For more on this, we are joined by national security correspondent Jeff Seldon. Jeff, what did we learn today?
CIA Director John Brennan spoke to the Senate Intelligence Committee Thursday morning, and he laid out a case that despite all the progress that had been made against Islamic State by the U.S. and coalition forces on the ground, that it was not enough and it has not been enough to significantly degrade the organization's global reach, that even though the caliphate had been damaged, even though Islamic State in Iraq and Syria has lost considerable amounts of territory, that as a terrorist organization, it remains formidable, lethal, resilient. And he even warned that at this point, as a way to respond to the losses that it's been taking on the ground, Islamic State leaders are trying to use Western fighters and send them back to the West as operatives to carry out terrorist attacks. And he said there was a large cadre that Islamic State had available, and he fully anticipated that the group would use them.
And, of course, there are also these people like the person in Orlando, inspired by ISIS, maybe not directed by, but inspired by. That's probably also a concern.
He mentioned that as a concern, and it's been one of the ongoing concerns with Islamic State and the way it operates, because it's really tapped into social media better than any other terrorist group. Other terrorist groups are using social media communication programs, apps, to talk with each other, but no one, according to intelligence officials in the U.S., has done it as well or as consistently well as Islamic State. And so what the group has been able to do is put out all this information, put out all this propaganda, and then have sufficient networks in place so that if somebody is angry, if somebody is ready to be recruited, if they're ripe to hear the Islamic State message and be radicalized, that they can reach out and radicalize those people with very little effort up front. It's almost a do-it-yourself radicalization, which is what seems to be the case with the attack in Orlando. CIA Director John Brennan told lawmakers on Thursday that so far they've not been able to establish any concrete links between the shooter, Omar Mateen, and any Islamic State or other terrorist group operatives.
And I know the one thing he did say was that we need to take away their safe haven where they are training operatives and generating revenue. But it would seem like we do that in one place and they just move somewhere else.
The picture he painted for lawmakers was grim, to be sure. But even then, even with the progress made in that effort by the U.S. and the coalition, that the Islamic State still had tens of thousands of fighters at its disposal. He gave new estimates and more precise estimates than we've heard him give before in public in terms of just the amount of resources the Islamic State has at its disposal. He said financially, even though the group has taken major hits from the U.S. and coalition bombing campaign against its oil infrastructure, still it's able to generate tens of millions of dollars to finance its operations. And that even though it's been losing fighters on the battlefield, that it's not been able to replace them as effectively as the U.S. and its allies work to shut down the routes that the foreign fighters have been using to get into Iraq and Syria. Still in Iraq and Syria, it has about 18 to 22,000 fighters. Overall, Islamic State now has more fighters at its disposal than Al-Qaeda ever did at its height.
Well, let's turn to politics now. A collection of surveys this week shows Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton pulling ahead of Republican challenger Donald Trump 5 months before November's national election. Now, it may have something to do with growing concern about members of the Republican Party, among members of the Republican Party, who are uneasy with many of Trump's recent statements. Let's talk more about this with national correspondent Jim Malone. Jim, it looks like Hillary Clinton is definitely benefiting from those Republican concerns.
The latest polls show Clinton pulling away a bit. You know, it's still early, so everyone has to take these polls with a grain of salt. The country's still divided, very polarized. But I think it's concerning to Republicans. What they're seeing is Trump more and more going off on his own, kind of refusing to take Republican advice from establishment type figures. And some of them are putting distance between themselves and Trump.
But have we ever seen this with another candidate where the Republican establishment doesn't get behind their guy?
Not to this extent in my memory. This is a very weird situation. It's almost like Trump launched a hostile takeover of the Republican Party and seemed to take party leadership by surprise. Don't forget, we go back less than a year, back to August, before the debates began, and he was not taken that seriously. Some people were actually laughing at the prospect of his candidacy.
They're not laughing anymore.
They're not laughing anymore at all. And sometimes he can pare back to the middle, be more disciplined. It puts Republicans at ease. When he's in one of these free-form moments, like we're seeing of late, the way he's reacted to the Orlando tragedy and calling out President Obama and Hillary Clinton and blaming them for laying the groundwork for policies that led to the terrorist attacks, this puts Republicans ill at ease. And now some of them have to think, my goodness, do we have to sort of run away from him in November as opposed to supporting him?
And that would bring me to the question of, it looks like there are Republicans coming out saying they will not support him, something Hillary Clinton would like to cash in on.
She's certainly happy to see the dissension fanned. And there have been some very strong comments from Republicans anti-Trump. There's no doubt about it. The question becomes, is it too late to do anything about Trump becoming the Republican nominee? Most of the Republican officials, most of the political experts say it probably is. But here's the thing, and I think this is really worrying Republicans. If this trend continues for the next several weeks leading up to the Republican convention of Trump behaving in a way that kind of puts the Republican brand in jeopardy, then what does that do? And I think it raises all kinds of questions about uncertainty in Cleveland at the convention, and we have no idea where that goes. This is not the time for a party to be engaging in this kind of speculation, worries, you know, fueling all kinds of concerns about their nominee. Traditionally, at the time of the political season, this is when you get behind your party nominee. We're starting to see that on the Democratic side, Clinton, Sanders, Obama. But I think it's giving Republicans a lot of pause right now.
Do you think some Republicans are wondering if they might not be better off cutting their losses for the next 4 years and not helping him get elected so that he doesn't damage their party potentially permanently?
There are some Republicans, a few, who have already walked away. I mean, Senator Mark Kirk of Illinois, who's up in a tough reelection fight, which is part of the reason he's doing this, he's already said he cannot support Trump. His anti-Muslim comments are beyond the pale, especially, he says, for the party of Abraham Lincoln. Lindsey Graham, who was a competitor to Trump, says he cannot support him. I was watching a former State Department official in the Bush administration today, Richard Armitage, saying he will vote, actually, for Hillary Clinton. Others, like Mitch McConnell, the Senate leader, Paul Ryan, Speaker of the House, still seem to be caught in this netherworld of, I want to support him, but I don't really want to talk about what he said because I don't agree with a lot of it.
All right. That was national correspondent Jim Malone. You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
From the ordinary to the extraordinary, you never know what in the world will happen next.
The world is watching with grave concern as Russia has positioned its military.
You should not allow anyone to deprive you of your right to determine the future.
We are using this against terrorist groups coming from Turkey.
With a landing on
and civilians. Sponsored by, no, we are not killing civilians.
With all that's happening, VOA News works to keep you up to date every hour of every day. So when you want to know what's new, you know what to do. Tune in your radio or click on the internet. World News on the hour, every hour, or at your convenience at voanews.com.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, the host for Jazz America, where each week we give you the best of jazz past and present and conversation with the music makers. You can hear the program online at voanews.com and on the air on VOA each Saturday and Sunday at 13 hours Universal Time. Join me for Jazz America and help me celebrate the greatness of a century of jazz. Listen at 13 hours Universal Time, Saturdays and Sundays on VOAnews.com and the Voice of America.
International Edition continues. In what would have been his 45th birthday, a documentary trailer has been released for a famous murdered rapper. That's coming up. But first, even though cannabis is still illegal, according to the U.S. federal government, 2 years ago, the state of Colorado, along with the state of Washington, became the first with legal marketplaces for recreational marijuana. Law enforcement experts are still debating the impact on crime, and not just for cannabis. From the marijuana mecca of Denver, Shelley Schlender reports.
At Local Product, a licensed Denver cannabis dispensary, a customer named Ryan shows his ID to prove he's over 21. Then he leans forward like a connoisseur smelling a fine wine.
Like this has a little bit more of a piney, some have citrusy smells.
But what he's sniffing are palm-sized nugs of dried marijuana.
No, we'll do a full ounce. Do a full ounce of that.
The ounce of nugs that Ryan buys complies with complex state and local rules, including health department regulations. Ryan will carry them home in a Colorado-mandated, childproof container. But almost everywhere else in the United States where retail marijuana sales are illegal, Ryan and the staff at Local Product could be arrested. Because that's not the case in Colorado, this transaction has been almost as casual as buying a latte at a coffee shop.
In the past, I would have to go to the black market, but now I can freely go to any shop that I please, and I can really pick someone that I feel comfortable with, as opposed to going and calling a random number that I would have no idea where it's going.
An undercover commander for the Boulder County Sheriff's Drug Task Force, voice altered to protect his identity, says marijuana stores can be good neighbors.
Well, they're like any other business as long as they're following the regulations.
The growers who bend the rules can create a stink.
That's what we get inundated with. There are phone calls from our citizens about people growing marijuana next door and just the odors out of control.
While most of Colorado's marijuana users are law-abiding, this commander says his task force is often overwhelmed with those who illegally smoke in public, drive while high, and sell to teens. Plus, he says organized criminals are smuggling marijuana out of state.
Because they can grow it here, there's not a lot of enforcement, and they can double their money on the East Coast.
He says all these enforcement issues related to marijuana add to similar violations already taking place among street drug users, plus people who abuse alcohol and legal drugs. Still, federal data shows that arrests for possession and distribution of pot in Colorado have dropped by nearly half since before sales became legal. As for the overall crime rate, there's been little change. An organization of current and former law enforcement officers, judges, and prosecutors is urging that the federal government legalize all drugs.
Does it seem fair that for a low-level drug crime, possession, distribution, that you would be incarcerated for decades?
Jason Thomas, a former Colorado law enforcement officer, is now a spokesperson for the group, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, known as LEAP. He envisions a nation where some drugs are sold at a storefront while others are more regulated.
And, you know, treat cocaine differently from marijuana, possibly from a medicinal side, but as well as a legal side.
Pointing to the state's crime statistics, he says fears that legalization would lead to mayhem have not panned out. The Colorado experience is being closely watched by a dozen states where activists are working to get out the vote for marijuana legalization there. For VOA News, I'm Shelley Schlender in Denver.
Well, today does mark what would have been Tupac Shakur's 45th birthday. And in honor of the late rapper, the first teaser trailer for upcoming biopic All Eyes on Me has been released. Music programmer for VOA 1, Ray McDonald, joins us now with a preview of the film. Hi, Ray.
It's actually a dramatization of Tupac Shakur's life. And it's called All Eyes on Me, named after his fourth album. Now, Tupac would have celebrated his 45th birthday on Thursday, June 16th. Now, he died in Las Vegas on September 13th, 1996, 6 days after a drive-by shooting that remains unsolved. Now, on the 16th, a one-minute-long teaser for All Eyes on Me was released online. And it features footage of Demetrius Shipp Jr., who stars as Tupac. He's performing on stage before being arrested by the police and the FBI. His mother, Afeni Shakur, is portrayed by Danai Gurira. Some viewers might remember her from The Walking Dead. Now, Afeni Shakur, the real Afeni Shakur, was executive producer of this movie before she died in May from a suspected heart attack. And one of the interesting things, Laurie, to me about this movie is that it's going to include portrayals not only of Tupac's rival, the notorious B.I.G., it will also include several celebs and public figures who are still living. And that includes Jada Pinkett Smith, who was friends with Tupac from the days they attended the Baltimore School of the Arts, along with record boss Suge Knight of Death Row Records. Mm-hmm. And Suge right now remains in jail on other charges. Biggie's wife, singer Faith Evans, and Kidada Jones, who was engaged to Tupac Shakur at the time of his death. So this movie, even though the events were 20 years ago, it remains very timely, and Tupac Shakur is still very much in the public eye.
Where and when can we see this?
The movie is going to be opening in the United States on November 11th. Mm-hmm. I don't have the international release schedule yet, but I'm telling you, there is worldwide interest in this movie.
That's going to do it for this edition of International Edition, but you can find us anytime online at voanews.com. We're glad you could join us today. And thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Thomas Blondett. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have yourself a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Americans continue to mourn the deaths of 49 victims and the wounding of dozens more in the recent terrorist attack on a nightclub in Orlando, Florida. This was the worst mass shooting in the history of the United States. In an address to the nation, President Barack Obama noted that the attack targeted a prominent LGBT gathering place and emphasized that an attack on any American, regardless of race, ethnicity, religion, or sexual orientation, is an attack on all of us and on the fundamental values of equality and dignity that define us as a country. The perpetrator of the massacre died on site in a shootout with police. He declared allegiance to ISIL in a phone call during the attack, although there is no information to this point suggesting that ISIL was in contact with the shooter before the attack. It does appear the shooter was inspired by various extremist information online and points to the challenge of countering extremist ideology and dealing with the perversions of Islam generated on the Internet. In a briefing shortly before the attack, Brett McGurk, special presidential envoy for the Coalition to Counter ISIL, noted that leaders from around the world tell him that the common denominator driving youth toward extremism is this notion of an historic caliphate. In the case of ISIL, as he says, their self-proclaimed phony caliphate. Because of that, it is necessary, Mr. McGurk said, for the coalition to shrink the core of the so-called caliphate in Iraq and Syria. And the coalition is having significant success in doing so. In Iraq, ISIL has lost nearly 50% of the territory it once controlled. In Syria, 20%. Many of its leaders have been killed. Its revenue has been drastically cut. Its flow of foreign fighters has been reduced. Its propaganda stream has slowed, and its morale has plummeted. President Obama noted, however, that while the coalition continues to uproot ISIL overseas, another imperative is countering the kind of propaganda and perversions of Islam espoused by ISIL and distributed over the Internet in order to generate homegrown terrorist acts. In any case, in the face of hate and violence, Americans will not give in to fear, Mr. Obama said. We will stand united to protect our people and defend our nation and take action against those who threaten us.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.